ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜನವಾರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಾರಿವರ ಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋಧನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋಧನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರ ವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ಸ್ತೋಜಯ ಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ನಷ್ಟ ಪ್ರೈಷು ಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯ ಭಗವತೀತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕೀ. ಸೊ ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಕಂಟಿನ್ಯೂಯಿಂಗ್ ಆನ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 13 Text 43. Yata kṛdopās karanam ಯಥಾಕೃಪಾಸ್ಕರಣಂ ಸಂಯೋಗವಿಗಮಾವಿಹ ನಿಶ್ಚಯಾ ಕ್ರೀಡಿತು ಸ್ಯತ್ತಂ ಇಚ್ಛಯಾ ಕ್ರೀಡಿತು ಸ್ಯತ್ತಂ ಇಚ್ಛಯಾ ಕ್ರೀಡಿತು ಸ್ಯತ್ತಂ ತಥೈವೇ ಶೇಚಯನ್ ನೃಣಂ Tathai veshe chayat nilam. Tathai veshe chayat nilam. Please chant.
As much as.
Krida upaskaranam.
Playthings.
Samyoga. The union. Vigamo.
Disunion.
Iha.
In this world.
Ichaya.
By the will of.
Kriditu.
Just to play a part.
Syatam.
Takes place.
Tata.
So also.
Eva.
Certainly.
Isha.
The Supreme Lord.
Ichaya.
By the will of.
Nirnam.
Of the human beings. Translation. As a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will, so the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. Purport. We must know for certain that the particular position in which we are now set up is an arrangement of the supreme will in terms of our own acts in the past. The supreme Lord is present as the localized Paramatma in the heart of every living being, as it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, 13:23. And therefore he knows everything of our activities in every stage of our lives. He rewards the reactions of our actions by placing us in some particular place. A rich man gets his son born with a silver spoon in his mouth, but the child who came as a rich man's son deserves such a place, and therefore he is placed there by the will of the Lord. At a particular moment when the child has to be removed from that place, he is also carried by the will of the Supreme, even if the child or the father does not wish to be separated from the happy relation. The same thing happens in the case of a poor man also. Neither rich man nor poor man has any control over such meetings or separations of living beings. The example of a player and his playthings should not be misunderstood. One may argue that since the Lord is bound to award the reactionary results of our own actions, the example of a player cannot be applied. But it is not so. We must always remember that the Lord is the supreme will, and he is not bound by any law. Generally, the law of karma is that one is awarded the result of one's own actions. But in special cases, by the will of the Lord, such resultant actions are changed also. But this change can be effected by the will of the Lord only, and no other. Therefore, the example of the player cited in this verse is quite appropriate. For the supreme will is absolutely free to do whatever he likes, and because he is all perfect, there is no mistake in any of his actions or reactions. These changes of resultant actions are especially rendered by the supreme, by the Lord, when a pure devotee is involved. It is assured in Bhagavad Gita 9:30-31 that the Lord saves a pure devotee who has surrendered unto him without reservation from all sorts of reactions of sins, and there is no doubt about this. There are hundreds of examples of reactions changed by the Lord in the history of the world. If the Lord is able to change the reactions of one's past deeds, then certainly he is not himself bound by any action or reaction of his own deeds. He is perfect and transcendental to all laws. Translation one more time. As a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will, so the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. Om Agyanita Mandasya Agyanita Shalapaya Chakshurum Nidham Yena Tasmai Shri Bhavan Namo Vishnu Bharaya Krishna Prasad Vithaya Shri Kudapi Vithaya Swami Kudapi Namaste Saitadevi Gauravani Kuchayani Nirvisesha Shunivadi Prasthutam Deshutam So good morning, everybody. It's really an honor to be back here speaking in front of all of you. And I think it's such a illustrious seat and illustrious service to Srila Vyasadeva and really all the devotees who have sat here in the past. So I humbly ask for everybody's blessings to continue with this class. With this verse, my first thought was how much of an all-encompassing instruction it is. And it's one of those philosophy in a bite-sized chunk verses. And there's a lot of those in this chapter. Just to give a little bit of context, in the beginning of the chapter, the first half was speaking of Dhritarashtra's meeting with Vidura, and how this was a very loving but heavy conversation that Vidura had with him. But he really instructed him, what are you doing? Now is the time to give up your attachment to being here and go to the forest. Now is the time to practice spiritual life. If you've come so far, you still have a little bit of time left, don't waste it. So as that happens, Yudhishthira Maharaj comes back and he sees three of his family members have gone. And he's very grief-stricken, doesn't know what happened. He thinks maybe it's because it was something he did. Sanjay also could not respond properly, being grief-stricken. So Narad Muni comes right at the right time. And I think it's about 6 to 8 verses or so. He speaks very succinct and really all-encompassing Krishna consciousness to Yudhishthira Maharaj, which pacifies him. But this chapter 13, I think, really gives lessons in detachment from two angles. And the first lesson is detachment from someone who is detached, or is attached, excuse me. So then there's Dhritarashtra, who's very attached, and he's to a point that is anyone outside looking in, you know, when someone's in a certain position where they can't see how they're actually doing, or they can't see what they're doing is destructive to their own life. Everybody around them can see that the decision they're making is bad. And that was exactly how Dhritarashtra was. He was in the situation when he was living in the house of his enemies. And, you know, Vidura said, almost as a dog living in the house of his master. But he could see that from the outside in perspective. And he spoke heavily to him, but lovingly. And that created attachment enough for him to get up, realize, become inspired, I need to go and serve Krishna, I need to work on my spiritual life. And so he went to the forest. And then the second point, detachment, or lesson of detachment, is for those who we are attached to. And ultimately everybody leaves this world. And that can happen in a variety of ways. But for those of us individually, we have to learn detachment, but we also have to learn detachment from the other people, or detachment from people who may leave our lives, even if they're so dear to us. And that's another very difficult lesson. So here, that second lesson in detachment is coming. And detachment is an essential ingredient for us to move forward in spiritual life and to end our lives in the Krishna conscious way. So Narad Muni comes just at the right time and he speaks hard philosophy. But then again, it's hard loving philosophy. And the idea behind this is to force detachment in Yudhishthira Maharaj's heart. And ultimately, Narad Muni wanted Yudhishthira Maharaj to remember Krishna. And in order to do this, there's certain things which may deter us. So I was thinking about this verse and how it's, before even getting into the purport and what it's speaking about, such strong and deep verses that are very all-encompassing of the philosophy, they're very logically sound. And that if someone is either a theist or an atheist, if you were to read this verse, it makes a lot of sense. There's a phrase that man proposes and God disposes. And so I think anybody, whether they're a God-believing person or not, they can understand that I've made plans in the past, and there is a higher power which disrupts my plans. And as much as I try to do things according to my own accord, they always don't go according to my own accord. Something always happens. What is that? So here, Narad Muni is clearly saying that just as a player can set up and disperse his playthings according to his own will, the Supreme Lord does so, and in this case, brings men together and separates them. So just from a standpoint of understanding that, you know, if you're speaking to a non-devotee and you're trying to convince them that there is Krishna, there is a supreme, there's a higher power than just yourself. There's something greater out there. One place to start is that, well, nothing is in your control. And everybody can agree on that. That's some kind of ground level that is the same for everybody. But here it's also saying that Krishna doesn't just disrupt our plans, but ultimately he does everything according to what's best for us and according to our own actions. And everything he does is all perfect, so everything in his plan is all perfect. And so essential truth verses like this that really encompass everything in one bite-sized chunk, I think are really important. And Srila Prabhupada, in every class really he gave, every conversation, at home we have a lot of you might have also, it's that little Srila Prabhupada lecture box. And it has a USB stick in it, and we have it going all the time. There's always lectures and conversations, and you really can't go 5 minutes. And she has one there. There you go. Handy dandy. You really can't go 5 minutes without hearing Prabhupada give an essential point that in one sentence and encompass everything in Krishna consciousness. And why did he do this? Why did he do it over and over again to every person he met for so many years with such urgency? And it's because we need a daily reminder, and we need a constant reminder what our position is in this material world, how we're not the controller, what is the position of Krishna, and what is our relationship with him. Because we've been conditioned for years and years and lifetimes and millions and billions of lifetimes to think the opposite. And that conditioning is so strong that as soon as you hear it, you hear what the actual truth is, you'll forget it or act in a different way 5 minutes later. So to constantly hear like this and then constantly try to apply over and over again is breaking these millions and millions of lifetimes of conditioning. And that's why this kind of verse, this kind of truth is so important to hear time and time and again. And we hear in every story in Bhagavatam, there is some point that says, this is the way it is, you're not the controller, Krishna, you're not this body, you're an eternal servant of Krishna, and act from this place. So this verse specifically has a lot of ties to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says a very similar message throughout the Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita states, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasham. Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself a doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So Krishna is the controller of all controllers. He's the ultimate controller, and not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. And everything he does is perfect, but the only imperfection is our inability to see his perfection and to see his divine will in every situation. And when we perform or commit sinful activities, there is a resultant action that's not so good for us, a punishment reaction. When we perform a good activity, there's a resultant positive action. So here in the purport, Krishna is saying, or Srila Prabhupada is saying, that Krishna knows our desires in our heart, and he acts accordingly, he gives to us accordingly. You know, and it doesn't matter if you're rich, doesn't matter if you're poor, the result is according to our own free will. So this is what Narad Muni is saying to Yudhishthira Maharaj. His essential argument is exactly that everything is meant to be as it's meant to be, but that is according to the sweet will of Lord Krishna, and he is his supreme protector. And for Narad Muni, this is very simple. It's, as someone who's more surrendered, this message becomes more clear and more sweet. For someone who's less surrendered, it becomes more fearful. You become more hesitant to take it up, because we're so used to doing everything according to our own accord. But to leave something in the hands of Krishna and know that his action, his will is perfect, and to act according to that is no problem, that takes a lot of surrender and practice. But implicitly, Narad Muni is saying, resistance is actually futile. Resistance is pointless. It's not going to get you anywhere. And in this case, lamentation and resistance to knowing that your family has left will only cause more grief. But the understanding of Krishna is in control will give you release from this grief and suffering, and also give you higher Krishna consciousness. And when thinking about this verse, the natural conclusion that comes to mind, and what comes in this purport, is, well, if this is the case, if even logically, if this is, you're not a believer in Krishna, not a believer in God, and you hear something so truthful that, yes, your plans are under your control, they're under supreme control, the next step is naturally to surrender. And that's the point that they're coming to here. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 11th chapter, Krishna shows Arjuna his universal form. And he shows this very what seems very scary and destructive and large form. And Arjuna, feeling very fearful, wants to see his two-armed form as Janardhana, as Krishna. And he says, therefore, Arjuna, prepare to fight, and understanding that surrendering unto my plan. So the idea here is, in surrendering, it's not an inaction, it's not a case of not doing anything, but rather surrendering unto Krishna's plan. So one thing that can be misconstrued with this verse is that, okay, Krishna isn't the ultimate control. He is moving pieces according to his own will. What's the point of me doing anything? But then Krishna clearly says in Bhagavad Gita that it's up to, you have to do your own duty, but do it according to a way that's fulfilling to my desires, and do it for me. So when we think about surrender, it's an action. It's really not just a mindset, because it's taking what Krishna says, or what we feel is our duty, and doing it for him, understanding that ultimately he is in control. And he states in Bhagavad Gita, this divine energy of mind, consisting of three modes of material nature, is very difficult to overcome. So everything we do is in accordance with the modes of material nature. And everything we do is being affected by the material nature and Krishna's external potency. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So for us to no longer be harassed, I would say, by our inability to perform our own plans, and harassed by the fact that we can't actually do anything without our plans going to waste, is that we surrender unto Krishna's plan and we keep doing everything to please Him, and ultimately we cross beyond that most material nature and whatever is binding us. And that's real freedom. It also says in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the effect of surrender and what it is like. So for those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who are the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Param Padam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So for one who surrenders unto Krishna, what's so difficult, what seems so impossible to overcome in this material world, becomes just like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. It becomes so easy and so simple for us. And so the Bhagavatam is reminding us that, no, actually it's not Krishna's in control, and just don't, let him do it and see what's going to happen. It doesn't matter, it's not in your will anyways. It's more so Krishna has a beautiful plan for you, and when surrendering unto Him and taking shelter unto Him, the whole material world becomes so simple, and so just like the water in a calf's footprint, so minute and easy to cross over. And that's the idea. But surrender really is also a regular practice, and in Krishna consciousness that's what's stressed daily and daily. And surrender is practice in our daily sadhana, it's practice in our chanting, and it's has to be done every day. And the example is given of a tea kettle. Now, if you have a tea kettle and you press the button and it's coming almost to a boil, and then you unplug it, and then you plug it in again, it comes almost to a boil, and unplug it, it'll never actually heat up fully. So same way with our sadhana and our practice of surrender. If we're doing it a little bit and then we stop, we're doing it with good intentions a little bit and then we stop, our Krishna consciousness will never come to a boil. It will never actually reach a boiling point. So the idea is to do things regularly, to practice surrender regularly, and to know that it's going to be difficult. Because of our conditioning that's happened over millions and millions of lifetimes, it's very difficult to do so. But with constant practice, eventually the water boils, and eventually we come to a boiling point. But it takes a lot of time and practice. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur would recommend this in chanting Hare Krishna. He would say, Grihe tako, vane tako, sada hari bole tako, suke duke bole nako, varane hari nam korore. Wherever, whether you are a householder or sannyasi, constantly chant Hari Hari. Do not forget this chanting, whether you are in a happy condition or a distressful condition. Just fill your lips with Hari Nam. So suke duke bole nako, bulo nako. Don't forget, even if you're sad, even if you're happy, whether you're in this stage of life, whether you're in that stage of life, always chant Hari Nam. So that's in his Sharanagati prayers, which are his sixfold practice that he recommends to surrender unto Krishna. And his main recommendation is chant, 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 over and over again. Doesn't matter if you're happy, doesn't matter if you're sad. It takes constant practice, and it takes practice knowing that you're going to mess up, and you're going to make offenses to the holy name. You're going to have times where you're not feeling surrendered to Krishna, where you're not enthused, where you're not following your vows, where you're not doing many, many things, but you have to keep going again and again and again. And this was the Acharya's faith in chanting the holy name as the means for surrendering unto the Lord. And in doing so, there's a preliminary step. And the preliminary step is implicitly also stated in this verse, that knowing that Krishna brings together man and removes him at his own will, he acts as a player with his playthings. You can think of someone playing chess, and they can move a chess piece at their own will. And it's just like that, nothing is under our control. You know, if we were a piece on a chessboard and being moved around, we have no control over what we can do. And that's a very humbling place to be. And that's the first preliminary step in chanting nicely, or chanting with absorption, chanting with attention, chanting with love. And that's understanding that Humility, the first step is understanding our position as very, very small, and Krishna is very, very great. But this is a very, very great loving relationship, where it's not someone dictating our lives according to their own will that doesn't have to be in accordance with us, or it's not good for us. In this verse, the idea is implicitly stating that you are not the doer. Everything is in the hands of Krishna, as simply as a player plays with his playthings. So you must start humility from this understanding, thinking oneself Lord in the blade of grass, understanding I am at the protection and the control of the Lord. Therefore, I am always satisfied and peaceful with that understanding. One time, this verse that we all know, that should be wore like a garland around our neck, Trinadapi Sinichena, Tarora Vyasahishna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Srila Prabhupada had a nice interaction in the early days with one god brother, a scholar and a doctor, O.B.L. Kapoor. And this is in 1931. Srila Prabhupada had his shop, his pharmacy business in Allahabad. And so Dr. Kapoor came to visit one day, and as a gift, Srila Prabhupada gave him a tonic. And jokingly, Dr. Kapoor said, "Oh, Abhay Babu, I wish you would give me the tonic that you use for Krishna Prema." And they both laughed in this way, but Prabhupada said, "I don't have that tonic yet, but I have the formula." And so I got a little bit serious, and Dr. Kapoor said, "Well, what's that formula? Can you tell me? If it's no secret, then I'd like to also know." So he quoted this Trinadapi Sinichena verse, and he said very powerfully, "This is the formula, and I am going to preach it all over the world." And you can see his vision from, 30, 40 years before he came to America. So he took this verse very seriously, and he took humility very seriously. Srila Prabhupada completely imbibed humility entirely, and that's the crux for his surrender unto Krishna, which caused many, many great things. And it caused all of us to be here today. And so this is one aspect of this verse, but another aspect that's mentioned towards the end of the purport, and I'll read a little bit. It says here, "These changes of resultant actions are especially rendered by the Lord when a pure devotee is involved. It is assured in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord saves a pure devotee who has surrendered unto him without reservation from all sorts of reactions and sins, and there is no doubt about this." So these changes of resultant reactions are especially rendered, and it's mentioning that Krishna, even if things are supposed to go one way according to our karma, he can place his hand and change anything at his own sweet will. But it's saying that changes are resultant actions are especially rendered by the Lord when a pure devotee is involved. And I think this is where the idea of seeking blessings and association and serving Vaishnavas very, very strongly comes in. And it's really an amazing thing to know that Krishna brings devotees into our lives and removes them at his own will. But there's so many devotees that come into our life and leave our life that we just don't expect at all. And we can't understand why certain devotees come into our life. For example, this one devotee in Vrindavan recently passed away, Bhuvanesh Prabhu. Many of you might have known him. And when I was in Vrindavan in 2015, I wanted to take a few months off and stay in serve in a 24-hour kirtan for a few months. And there, all the boys loved Bhuvanesh Prabhu. They just loved him entirely. They had a really nice bond, and it was very sweet, but I had no idea who this devotee was. My first interaction was just, seemed like a grumpy old person, and it was kind of hard to connect with him. And somehow or another, I spent 2 months straight with him every evening for an hour reading. Someone gave me this service. Why don't you... He always engaged devotees in the service, washing his clothes, reading to him, massaging him, doing this and that. And he was a real Brajbasi. He just stayed in the Dham and did his worshipping of a deity, cooked the bhoga offering, did kirtan, and I was there every evening. We read 5-6 books together, just reading to him, and I really grew a nice affection for him and a nice bond there. And I had no idea who he was. Krishna really just put him in my life. And when I left Vrindavan, I realized that was the most wonderful aspect of me being there, which I didn't expect. And I didn't expect Krishna to place him in my life. or Krishna to take him away. But I'm very grateful for that experience. And so it's important to note that Krishna brings people into our life. And there's, I think it's Bhakti Tirthamaraj said this, but the devotees who you're serving with right now and who are with you right now can very easily be the devotees who are there when you leave your body. And it's a really, you know, profound statement that devotees here could be the devotees who are supporting you to go back to Godhead. And what does that reflect about how I should interact with other devotees and how I should treat one another, regardless of who they are, regardless of what I think about them, or what some small interactions might be that made me think of them in some way or another. So it's no ordinary thing to take for granted or feel as a burden, but to have certain devotees appear in our life, it's there because of Krishna, and they're there for a reason. Even if those relationships may seem like they're not positive, they're all essentially there to help us in Krishna consciousness in some way or another. And so these blessings of the devotees is what I can say, you know, pulls Krishna's heart to adjust our lives in certain ways. And the blessings of devotees means protection in spiritual life, ultimately. And without protection in spiritual life, there's no safety net. And it's very, very easy to just fall away. You know, if you're falling from, let's say, a building, or for example, if you're, I remember when we were younger, bungee jumping was a cool thing. If you're bungee jumping and there's no safety net, you fall, that's it. So in spiritual life, if you don't have blessings of other devotees, there's no safety net, and it's very easy to fall away. And the blessings of devotees are actually so, so powerful that they give protection to Krishna himself. And there's a story in the Ramayana, it's a really beautiful story. I didn't know it until a couple of days ago, my father was telling it to me. But after the whole war, and after the exile, and Ravana was killed, Lord Ram was crowned king, then Ram and Lakshman were sitting together one day, and Lakshman asked Lord Ram a question. And he said, Lord Ram, there's something on my mind. It's been harassing me for many years. I have a question to ask you. And so Ram said, what's your question? So he started it off this way. Oh, you and I were born of the same father. Yeah, do you have any doubt? I said, no, I'm just asking. Our mothers loved you and I the same, correct? Well, yes. And so we went to the forest at the same time, correct? Yes. We are also both chivalrous, powerful. Well, yes, we are. We went to the same school. Lord Ram said yes. We have the same guru, yes. And he kept asking questions like this. And then we were married in the same day, yes we were. So Lakshman, what's your question? What are you trying to get at here? And what's your doubt? He said, my question to you is, if everything is the same in both of our lives, then how is it that when Meghna, the Indrajit, shot his arrow and we were fighting, I was almost killed, but you were protected. Everything else was the same. All our upbringing, everything was the same, but this happened. And I needed, Hanuman came and protected me and brought the medicine, but I almost left my body. How come you were not affected, but I was? And Lord Ram smiled, because he knew the answer. And he said, remember when we saw Shabari, and you and I went to Shabari's Kutir, and she was biting into the berries and feeding both of us. I ate the berries, but you took it, threw it behind you. You remember that? And he says, yeah, well, I didn't know you saw. Of course I saw. And he felt, oh, how could I eat her jutta? How can I eat what she already ate and taken it? That's not proper. Especially since she came from an untouchable caste. And Lord Ram said, it's the affection, the bhava that she put into those berries, and that is what protected me. And that is the protection, or that is the power of the protection of the devotees. Because of her love that she put into biting those berries, and the love she had for so many years waiting for me until I came, that protected me on the battlefield. But you did not bite into those berries, so you did not have that protection. And because you did not have the shraddha, you did not have the faith, when you threw them away, the kavacha was not there. And for this reason, you almost died on the battlefield, and I do not. So even the Lord himself is showing that because of the blessings, the affection of the devotees, and when we seek the affection of the devotees, it becomes such a protection in our life. it becomes such a kavacha that we, in the Lord's case, he was not killed in battle. Of course, this is the pastime, he cannot be killed. But he is showing this in such a way. And so, to really make advancement into Krishna consciousness, it's essential to serve devotees and be humble and subservient. And that means to devotees that Krishna places into our life that we may not know so well, that we may prefer to be with other devotees. Once when I was on a bus tour and I was a teenager, and it was my first one going by myself, and we were in Europe. And in the beginning, I didn't know many people. And a friend told me, he's like, Prabhu, just relax and enjoy the company of the people that you're with, regardless of how you feel about them and your hesitations. And it changed my whole trip. And because when you're just whoever it is, whoever devotee it is, whatever the relationship might be, if you act the same way, in a place of seeking blessings, in a place of pleasing them, then ultimately Krishna is pleased. And we'll see that those devotees that Krishna puts in our lives are the right devotees for us to help us in our spiritual path. So to make advancement in Krishna consciousness is always necessary to seek to serve devotees. So we have to learn to be affectionate unto devotees and learn what that means and how to do so. Notice our own hesitations in being affectionate, in being loving, in serving them, and also learn how to serve different devotees according to our own capacity. So it's not a congenial situation that Lord Ram had to eat the half-eaten berries, but because he accepted this love of the devotees, and he pleased Shabri so much that he was protected ultimately. And that's the power of affection, that's the power of blessings in a nutshell. So in this verse, it's speaking to both how we're completely not in control. Krishna's in control. And that is just getting us to surrender. And knowing, having that knowledge is the preliminary step, the preliminary understanding to surrender. And I think understanding this in Sanskrit, Sambandha, understanding our relationship to Krishna and our position in this world, his position, ultimately leads to loving Krishna and Prayojana, the ultimate goal of life. And it's actually the same thing happened with Yudhishthira Maharaj. I think about it, when he sought blessings of all the Vaishnava, all the seniors of his family before the war. Bhishma told him that actually it's because you came and you sought blessings, the Pandavas came, for that reason you will be victorious. And had you not sought blessings, then the war could have won a different way. And this is Vaishnava philosophy. In general, we always conclude that serving devotees, worship of devotees is higher than worship of Krishna. And Krishna says to the Bhagavad Gita that those who serve, those who spread my message, or those who spread my message are more dear to me. And this is so many examples of Krishna really worshiping his own devotees. And so that's class in a nutshell. That's any questions or comments? Just go ahead.
You know, do you know why that girl, I forget her name, what's her name?
Shabri?
Yeah, did you know why she tasted it first, before she offered to Ram?
I mean, my idea is that out of her love, she wanted to taste it to make sure the berries weren't bad, so that Lord Ram got to taste
good,
the Lord.
Sweet enough,
they were
right?
Good and sweet, yeah. Yeah, it was very much that affection. And that affection overcame any thoughts of etiquette. In the same way, the gopis would just leave their husbands in order to be with Krishna. Any thought of etiquette went out the window, but purely out of love. And so the same kind of idea was there with Shabri. Yeah. Don't try it at home. Just kidding.
Well, you spoke about Bhaneshwar Prabhu and Shabri also. It just brought memory back, because
yeah.
I knew Bhuvaneshwar when I first joined pretty much in Los Angeles. He was there 1974. And he was doing something like what you were describing in Shabri. It was like Jadu Thakur. He used to take remnants of all Vaishnavas, and Swami, he became very fixed in this. He was always steadfast in his devotional service.
Was he the same then as he was?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He was Kalidas? Oh, okay. Kalidas, okay. He used to take all the remnants. He used to even, during the Sunday feast, I think he was even taking sometimes the remnants of the guests.
Another sacred designation.
Thank you for a really nice class. So, you know, sometimes when you hear nothing happens without the will of Krishna,
yeah.
Or you hear nothing happens without Krishna's sanction.
Yeah.
So it sounds like when you say the word sanction or will, it almost sounds like, well, he's approving it.
Mm.
But it couldn't be that, right? It's got to be more like Krishna's given everyone the independence to act.
But
that's really what it means.
Yeah, it's not so much that we do something and then Krishna approves or disapproves, because it's his position is different. Well, his position of his will is firstly in accordance with our karma, and our karma is in accordance with the gunas, with modes of material nature. So he's giving to us what we desire, essentially. But I think when it says his will in this verse, it's also talking about that Krishna is independent. It says, Srila Prabhupada says, it may seem that this example of the player and the plaything is inappropriate, because Krishna is only sanctioning according to what we do and what we desire. He's giving what we deserve, so to say. But he's saying, no, actually Krishna is independent to the laws of nature, and he can do as he wishes himself. And so he can intervene in our life, and he can reduce our karma. We hear a lot about that, that Srila Prabhupada would say, by just clapping your hands, the lines in your hands would grow longer, meaning that your life is extended. That just by performing devotional service, your karma changes in that way. And that's Krishna's hand in our life, in a sense. And then even further, by the blessings and the affection from the pure devotees, that pulls Krishna's heart in a certain way to interject. So, in that sense, it's his will, and he can act according to how he wants. But, in general, the idea is Krishna delivers what we deserve.
Yes, even in the purport, I think you were mentioning that Prabhupada said there's so many examples of Krishna reduce the karma, or change the karma. So I guess, personal comes to mind is Madhvari. By Narada's intervention, he was able to kind of get rid of it. I guess there's so many, but that's so many.
Yeah. When speaking to my dad about this a couple of days ago, the idea we came to was every disciple of Srila Prabhupada.
it's
directly through the affection of a pure devotee, as Prabhupada says in the verse, and then Krishna's heart is pulled to act at his own will. You know, I'm sure a lot of devotees who are here today isn't because of so much pious, I mean, maybe as well, but it's also mercy cases, and that supersedes all the pious activity you could be doing to come to the place we are here today, because of the mercy and affection of a pure devotee. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, please, for me.
Very nice class. I'm very impressed. I like when you come with your own realization, such a sweet way. Relevant to the topics and relevant to us. One morning, Prabhupada had a wonderful discussion regarding this. And I think Rameshwar Prabhu asked that question, that since Krishna, the 1861, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddhesha Arjuna Tishtati Brahman Sarva Bhutani Jantrarani Mayaya. So, Krishna is directing everybody, all the souls, higher and lower. Why not he directs towards him? Prabhupada said, yes, Krishna is directing, but he is not directing according to his desire. He is directing according to everybody else's desire.
So then this Prabhu again asked Prabhupada, so then we have to develop a desire to come to him, then he will direct to us? Prabhupada said, yes. This is the key point. That we have to develop a desire to serve him, then Krishna will direct us to come to him or serve. Otherwise it will never happen. He doesn't intervene in that sense.
Right, right.
Also, not necessarily every soul that desire Krishna sanction. No. It says, Atma Ichha Jeev Koti Vancha Kare. Jeev Koti means Jeeva desire millions of things. Jai Krishna Ichha Kare Sei Phal Dhare. What Krishna sees in his heart, in his record, whether he deserves or not, only he sanctioned that. So how do you know what Krishna sanctioned? Oh, whatever is happening, that's all he sanctioned. Whatever is not happening is not sanctioned, period.
Yeah.
So whatever happening in my life, your life, that is sanctioned by Krishna.
Yeah.
What is going to happen, we don't know. But if something I want but is not happening, means he's not sanctioning, I don't deserve it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very simple way.
Right. Thank you. Okay. There's a question here. Look at it here.
Just a small follow-up on Prabhuji's point. Jiva Goswami says that the sanctioning is not really done by Krishna, it's done by Paramatma. Paramatma is the manifestation that is the witness and the sanctioning authority in the heart of the jiva.
Right.
Jiva Goswami made this point because he says, Krishna is so busy, essentially I'm paraphrasing, Krishna is so busy, no time to consider what's going on here. So he says, as the super soul, he witnesses and provides sanction according to the verse that Prabhuji quoted.
Yeah, that was actually stated in the first sentence of the purport. I think everybody's interested to hear more.
Actually,
somebody put it in a Facebook, somebody texts me a lot. Even one of senior devotees, he says, I notice in Alachua temple you chant Brindai Tulsi Devai, which I do almost every day. Because I make the announcement and after that. But why you say Vishnu Bhakti? I said, I'm just repeating what I was supposed to repeat by the acharyas, headed by Prabhupada. Because we don't have too many authority. We have all the authority followed by Prabhupada. We follow Prabhupada means we are following all the authority in that sense. So Prabhupada established this way, so I'm saying it. He said, but it should be Krishna Bhakti. So I found many verses. The essence of Ras Lila. Last verse, Vikriditam Brajabodhavi Idam Cha Vishnu. I said, can you explain me which Vishnu is dancing with Radharani and Gopis? How to understand this? This is the essence of Raslila. Now if you come to Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami Pada, I mean now I'm remembering so many slokas. This sloka says, Jatha Radha Priya Vishnu Tasya Kundam Priyam Tatha Sarve Gopesha Vishnu Raptanta Ballava. So Radharani is the most dearest to that Vishnu. Which Vishnu? This is in Rupa Goswami Pada's own speaking.
So which Vishnu is that? So that means Vishnu means Sarva Vyapnati Iti Vishnu. One who can be in the heart of all the living beings. Paramatma cannot be in Brajavasi's heart. But it is Krishna. So when we take Krishna, he is everything. And that is proper. I do not find it. So then the devotee didn't say anything. I say, okay.
So the appearance in the heart of Bhagavan will be according to the nature of that bhakta. For instance, if the Ishtadeva of that bhakta is Sri Narayan, Sri Shamsunda Krishna appears super soul. Gopis who cannot go for rasa dance, Dusaha Tivratapa Dushta Shubala, this verse, right? That who appeared in their heart was Rajendranandan Shamsundar. So he did not appear as Janardhan Paramatma Antaryami. In the heart of every jiva, however, the tattva of Bhagavan that appears in the heart of every jiva is actually Janardhan, who's Antaryami, not directly Shamsundar Shri Krishna. Only if that devotee has developed a bhav towards Krishna in that way, does Krishna directly appear in the heart. If the case is that Shamasundar, Jaranardhan, Narasingha, Ramachandra, all the same, Rasavichar goes out the window. So according to Rasavichar, Krishna appears in the heart of the devotee according to the nature of that bhav. Right?
That's true.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, but that's true. But that you look at another angle also, that we, the devotees here in the temple, we follow Prabhupada, and when I bring a good reference that when the devotee asks Prabhupada that Tannama rupa charitadi sukirtananu smritto kramena rasanamana sinirja tishtan braje tadunuragi jananu gami. So according to Rupa Goswami, kalam nayat okhilamiti upadesha saram. The essence of all advice is we should follow a Brajavasi footstep and then. Prabhupada said, I am here. So then all the followers of Prabhupada, they are already in Brajadham in that lila. We don't need to think even Vaikuntha or other, we are not. But to develop actually Brajendranandan Shyam, we have to know all his quality, all the 64 quality, all his expansion. It is not going to be otherwise. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a gyan hoile muk taba mukha nam tumate abhinna jariya bastur nam bastu hoite bhinna. Those who actually worship Brajananda, Radha Shyamsundar, actually Shyamsundar name is the highest, Shyamam Eva Param Rupa. This is Rupa Goswami Pad writes. Amongst all the form, Shyam Rupa, because Shyam Sringara Rati, the one, the Lord who is always, uninterruptedly, incessantly, always in a playful, sporting with Radharani. So that's Shyam of form. So the devotees in Ishkan, especially in Alachua, I don't know the all over Ishkan, but just the idea that when we are following Radha Shyamsundar, we don't have any doubt that it is the ultimate Brajananandan form, Brajananda Kumar, that we are following. So any name that we give, we take in that way. When we see the Nishingadev, we say, oh, Shyamsundar came in the form of Nishingadev. Is that correct? Okay. Yes, that's how we see. So we do not see any separate, whether Janardhan or even Narayan. Huh. We say, ah, Krishna, because Narayan is also in Kaita God. As Krishna,
yeah.
He could not resist from Radharani.
Right.
But with gopis he could. Mm-hmm. But it's the same Krishna.
Yes. So, but the idea here is that, like you're saying, if you're following in the anugatya of Srila Prabhupada, because he's Brijbasi, so we're imbibing that mood of Braj, we're seeing like that.
Yes.
But Raghunath Das Goswami said also, we will understand, Guru Goshtay Goshtali Shu, Sujana Guru Suvine. What of Sujana meaning Sri Vaishnavas? What of Nimbarka Acharya?
That is different.
But
when we face them, I agree with you that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says I'm sorry.
Maybe we can close that class. The Saundarya Brahman Mahaprabhu says that he literally detected this kind of ecstasy symptom in this Brahmana is impossible unless he has a connection with Madhavendra Puri, that Braja Prem. So then when he detected, then the whole discussion took place. I don't want to take time, but it's a beautiful discussion. I sometimes meditate even on that. And then Mahaprabhu himself said, without somebody has a connection with Madhavendra Puri, it is not possible to come what Mahaprabhu came to give. He himself is saying. And Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur gave a big elaboration on this. So when we think of Prabhupada in that line, so we don't have any problem. Now, you made a very good point. When other sampradaya Vaishnava comes, we have to also be merciful and compassionate at the same time. We have to maybe encourage them to link up, accept some Shiksha Guru or to Prabhupada or somewhere if they want to dive into this rasa. But if they are not interested, we are not interested to disturb. We should not disturb anybody.
Why would they disturb? They're also, this Raghunath Goswami said, they're also Sujala. They're also Vaishnava.
That is true.
So,
but in Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan, everybody is joined.
Sure.
No question of who is
who. Daha, Anupam.
Yeah.
Anupam also,
yeah.
They did not change. Mahaprabhu told,
no,
please.
They are not interested of changing.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
But we should invite them.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, and actually in Mahaprabhu's Leela, all previous devotees come, right? Because all of the priya devotees of previous incarnations, they're invited to Mahaprabhu's Leela. Prayamnaiva Goparamanam, Kama Mityagamatputam, Udava Adayopetam, Vajanti Bhagavad Priya. So many devotees from previous incarnations, they come to Goa Leela to get their desires satisfied. Even Lakshmi Devi, even Prahalad, even Hanuman, all come to Goa Leela and they will be satisfied. So they're not left out. But to Prabhuji's original